So I'm actually starting a new audio for the beginning of Yudalit, because this requires a major introduction. I gave you, when we started 13, I gave you the introduction, like the outline of Prakim Yudalit and Tetvav and Tetzayin. But just to bring, you know, to remind you, Prakim Yudalit and Tetvav, chapters 14 and 15, are the story of Shimshon and an anonymous Plishti woman from a place identified as Timnatha, as you'll see. Shimshon courts her. He has his parents court her. He, it appears, marries her. There's a great party. Shimshon offers a riddle, right, which no one can solve until they get the answer from his wife. Shimshon takes revenge against them. And then, he gets revenge for two things that happen, but I don't want to spoil everything for you. But he gets revenge against them via foxes. Then the Jews turn Shimshon in to the Plishtim after that story, and that's the end of Perek Tezvav. Perek Tezayin will give us Shimshon and a second Plishti woman, and then Shimshon and a third Plishti woman, the most famous one, Galila. And then we get the whole sad story of Shimshon's end. That's the outline of where we're going with this. The themes we're going to see are in part what we already saw in Perek Yud-Gimel, but in part are different. The theme of assimilation, standing apart from the Plishti Kanani society around us, is very strong here, obviously, the whole story of Shimshon and these women. Divine aid, the idea that everything is coming from Hashem, is going to be very strong here, as we see when Shimshon is supported by God and when Shimshon is not. And layers of betrayal. There are so many layers of betrayal in this story coming up. What do you see in terms of betrayal? Sorry?
I don't remember the story.
Right, well, Delilah, well, his wife, first of all, the first one with the riddle, where they're going to get the riddle out of her, and then Delilah with the cutting of his hair. But more than that, the Jews turned him in, and Shimshon betrayed the Jews in going after the Plishti women. That's the way it's portrayed in Tanakh, is that it is a betrayal of the Jews, and we're going to see that here, in marrying the Plishti. It's a betrayal of God in marrying the Plishti as well. And of course, it's betrayal of the Plishtim for the Jews, not only in terms of his wife, but in terms of, in general, what's going to happen between the Plishtim and the Jews. So layer after layer of betrayal as a theme within this, within the coming Prakim. Yes, we have to talk about it. That's coming next.
It doesn't seem to be like such a good spot. Like that was where Judah met Tamar.
Yep, and we have to come back to that one for sure.
Like just to get into, like, you know, getting good with the Plishtim, like, you know, maybe like a spy.
Maybe. I'll tell you what.
And I'm giving the benefit
of that. Yeah, that's I'm going to come back to the preface. I'm going to come back to the preface that I gave in the beginning of Perek Yud-Gimel, and really it belongs here more than it did in the beginning of Perek Yud-Gimel, which is he's a shofet. Right? His name is in Tanakh, and mine isn't, so to speak. It is, because Purim Mordechai is. But it's very hard, and it should be very hard, to read this and assume the worst about the figures here. I don't think it's an appropriate way to read Tanakh, to try to look for and assume the worst possible read. We aren't given enough information about people. Even with a Shimshon, where we get four Prakim, we don't get enough information to really have a sense of who he is. All we get is the image that we'll form from the little information that we have. As human beings, we are hardwired to use intuition and to take small pieces of information and try to create a picture of that. And that may be useful when you're hunting in a forest and you need to figure out whether the animal there is prey or predator. But it's not very useful in psychology. You can misread something very easily in a case like this, and it's not like we have the ability to ask questions and get more information from Shimshon. So I think it's a hard thing to do. Having said that, you can't deny what you see in front of you in the Psukim, and you have to ask yourself, the canonizer of Tanakh, canonizers really, Anshei Knesset HaGedolah get the credit for canonizing it, decided to present it in this way. They knew what they were sending. They knew the message that they were sending. And it's up to us to ask, what message are they trying to send us? And not to whitewash it and just say, well, Shimshon was really wonderful. he is a troubled person. There's no way around it. You can't. You may like Shimshon. Yeah, I don't want to ruin that. But you can't get around the fact that there is trouble here. And the very first element of trouble is this business with the women. There's no way around the fact that he's getting involved with three Plishti women. And so how in the world do you deal with that? So the first thing you have to discuss, which I apologize because you already learned this in Ezra, but not everybody has, is the question of whether intermarriage was prohibited at that time. Was intermarriage prohibited at that stage in Jewish history? Yes or no?
With certain nations?
With certain nations?
Well, if you were saying that it was Israel to the Jewish people, then I would go with yes.
Okay. Anyone provide some evidence?
We have lots of... Judah marries the wife...
Well, that's before Har Sinai. Anything that's before Har Sinai doesn't count.
Okay.
Except to note that before Har Sinai, we already see condemnation of the women of the land. Right, the you know Yitzchak and Rivka are made bitter by the wives of Esav. Abraham tells Eliezer, "Go abroad to get you know to my family to get a wife for Yitzchak. I don't want you taking a local woman." Rivka says to Yitzchak, "I don't want Yaakov to marry a local." Granted that there's also another agenda: get him out of the house before his brother kills him. But the, there's a very clear negative. Shlomo is a big question, right? Same question we have to ask regarding Shimshon. Shlomo marries not just the thousand wife Medrash, but the literal reading of the Pesukim. It says he married women from the other nations. It's very clear. So how do we look at that? So Chumash is clearly hostile to intermarriage with Canaan. I don't know. Abigail is Jewish. She's Jewish. Yeah. So we already know that the Chumash is hostile to intermarriage with the Canaanim. Your best example, actually nobody said, is Pinchas in this week's Parsha. Right? When Zimri is involved with Cosby and Pinchas kills him. Right? That would seem to indicate that intermarriage is a bad thing. If you take a look on your sheet, it's verse number 6. I didn't translate 6 and 7, so I was trying to fit sources onto the page. But it's Pesukim and Chumash, so hopefully you have a Chumash and you can look them up. But in number 6, we are warned, Pentechros Baris Lioshev Haaretz, lest you, this is Parshas Kisisa, lest you make a covenant with the dwellers of the land, Vizanu Achrei Eloheihem, and they will stray after their gods, the idols, right? This is not Shemos. They will bring offerings to their gods. Because what's going to happen? He will call to you and you'll eat from his sacrifices for his idols. You'll take his daughters for your sons. Then their daughters are going to go follow their gods. And they'll take your sons to go follow their gods. Is that a prohibition against intermarriage?
Well, it's telling them that this is the correction. It doesn't say exactly that you can't intermarry, but if you do intermarry, this is likely to happen.
Correct. The message here is not taken as a prohibition. The message is taken as a warning of you should know where intermarriage will lead, which may go back to Ora's point to say that even if it's not prohibited, it may be a terrible thing to do. It may be a gateway to idolatry, which we do know is prohibited. But take a look at the next source, because that's really the source that gets quoted for a prohibition against intermarriage. God's bringing you into this land, and he will make many nations fall before you. Seven great nations, they're mightier than you are. God will give them before you. You will strike them, you will destroy them. Do not make a covenant with them, do not show them favor. and do not marry among them. Do not give your daughter to his son. Do not take his daughter for your son, because he will lead your son astray. Right from behind me, they'll worship other gods. God will get angry, and he will destroy you quickly. Is that a prohibition? Very clearly. But against marrying whom?
Right. Doesn't include
the wife, the women, but not the nation. It says that the daughters are not going to cause that problem.
So it actually does. It actually does. I'm not going to go into the whole discussion of it here because matrilineal descent is a whole other discussion. But it does mention Ki Asiras bin Chamei Acharai. I'm sorry, it mentions before that. Bitchalos Yelivno, Bitchalos Tikach Livnecha. Both of them, both ways. But the prohibition here against intermarriage, and this is the big question, may specifically be with the Canaanite nations. And the Plishtim are not Canaanim. So take a look at source number 8, which indeed shows you it's a machlokas in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah.
And it seems that God's very worried that they'll pray to some other god. He's not worried about the destruction of the Jewish people, per se. His concern is Avodah Zarah.
Yes.
It's not where we preach today is the abandonment of our people.
Well, I'm not sure who preaches what, so I'm not going to...
All right, but Shimshon is...
Correct.
Am I getting...
Yes.
But if they convert, you can marry one of them. It's not like Malav and Amar.
Correct.
You can marry that individual.
Yes. If they convert. Correct.
How does this fit with Avram's mandate to have Ahmed Sadrachim, which means obviously to other people who are not Jews? How do you...
The answer is that Avraham is in a different time. Right? In Avraham's day, as Hashem told him at Bris Bein Habsarim, the Canaanim have not sinned so much that Hashem says that their society has to be dismantled. This generation coming into the land is told the Canaanim have become so terrible that you have to take apart their society. So you're not supposed to welcome them into your tent to offer them
dinner. So again, we're back to these specific people.
So that's the question. That's the question. So take a look at source number 8. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah is commenting on a Mishnah in which the Mishnah had said that the sages decreed against the daughters of the nations. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean decreed? B'nostayin da'oraisei, it's a biblical prohibition, marrying the daughters of the nations. D'chsev, los yishatein bam, right? Our pasuk. So the Gemara says, da'oraisa zayin umos. The first view here in the Gemara is that the biblical prohibition is specifically the 7 Canaanite nations. Aval shara of the kochavim lo, but not the rest of the idolaters. The asu inhu, and then along came the rabbis, the gazra filu the shara of the kochavim, and they prohibited everybody else. In other words, it is actually a rabbinic prohibition against marrying others, and the author of the rabbinic prohibition is none other than Ezra. Because when the Jews come back, in the second Beis HaMikdash, some of them marry in the land, and when Ezra shows up and he is informed of this, he tears his clothing and he sits on the ground and he does this whole mourning ritual and ultimately declares that no, they shall not marry in this manner. So what we're saying is that actually Ezra creates a rabbinic prohibition. And presumably the reason for doing so would be to prevent Avodah Zarah, to prevent idolatry, and that's what's indicated in the Pesukim in Ezra. Yeah.
Or also promised Kikochvei HaShemayim.
Yeah.
How do you grow and become insular at the same time?
You have to produce many children. No, and that's the answer.
What about the Shabbat Shevi?
What about it?
Well, the Torah has this whole thing about...
Yivei Eshe Sipas Tawar?
Exactly.
But that's a no-no. That's not supposed to happen.
But you are. But if you do find one, and you do after all the month goes by, and everything else, you are allowed.
Then you are allowed to. Correct. But that's that involves a conversion.
Yes, you're
right. Yes, that's part of that is the conversion. The whole Gemara there on Ubachsa Sabia Vesima, she's going to mourn for her father and mother. It's her heritage. Yeah. But we're not done with the Gemara. The Gemara then says, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, the Amar ki Asiras bin Chamei Acharai l'Rabos kol haMesiros. The Gemara says, what about Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai? Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai read the same pasuk that we just read in source number 7, and said that when the Torah there says that if you marry among the nations, then they're going to take your children and bring them into Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai understands that to mean the prohibition is not only the Canaanites, but it's any non-Jews. It isn't specific to Kananim. So then Ma'ika Lomemar, so what will he say? Where was the rabbinic prohibition? And the answer will be, Ela Daraisa Ishus Derechatnus. The biblical prohibition is against marrying any non-Jew. Specifically marriage, meaning a monogamous long-term relationship. And the rabbinic prohibition was Derech Zinus, to be involved outside of that marital framework with them. That's the rabbinic prohibition. So what you have is actually a debate in the Gemara as to whether it was biblical or rabbinic. And therefore, if it's rabbinic, Shimshon is not breaking any laws. It may not be a good thing to do. It may lead to Avodah Zarah. It may be seen, as Malachi said, as a betrayal of the Jewish people. You had to go outside in order to find somebody. Nonetheless, the rabbinic prohibition wouldn't have existed in his day. However, when it comes to Pesach, we generally assume that it is biblical. Right, but that's actually a major question of what exactly did Esther do with Ahasuerus and what was her justification. That's not a simple and straightforward thing. What the Gemara Megillah actually says is that first of all, the Gemara says that she was married to Mordechai beforehand. That's its own discussion. But that once she goes to Ahasuerus willingly, she can't go back to Mordechai anymore. Sure, avadati is I am lost to you from now on. Take a look at number 9, though, the flip side of the page. The Rambam's framing of this. The Rambam believes that it is de'oraisa. It is biblical. He says, Yisrael Shabal Aku Mishara Umos Derech Ishus. If a Jew lives with an idolater from the nations in a manner of marriage, O Yisrael Shanival Alavet Kochavim Derech Ishus. First it was a man with a non-Jewish woman, now it's vice versa. Hare elu lokin min haTorah. They get lashes. They violated a biblical prohibition. Lo sis chatein bam, b'cholosin livno, b'cholosin kach livnecha. That's your verse, which we've already seen. And he says, echad shiva amamin, ve'echad kol umos b'isur zeh. It applies to the 7 nations and any nation. The v'chein b'furash l'idei Ezra, and he gives you a pasuk from Ezra as well, that I was referring to, where Ezra makes this statement of, we shall not marry them. He goes on to delineate the distinction between biblical and rabbinic. The Rambam does something strange here, in that he has a pasuk from Parshas Va'eschanan which he quotes, and then he quotes you the Ezra pasuk as well. He didn't need the Ezra pasuk. So the commentators suggest that the reason he did it is because if you go back to the Gemara for a second, interesting methodology point in source number 8, it is the anonymous sage versus Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is the one who says that it is biblical, the anonymous sage that it's rabbinic. Normally we do not follow Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai in such a debate. Normally we would not ask him like him. So the Rambam needs to justify why he has said that it's biblical. And the answer is because the Pesukim in Ezra make it sound like it's biblical. And they do. Meaning when Ezra hears about the intermarriage, he's already wailing and screaming and crying, even though, if you believe it's rabbinic, there's no prohibition against it. It may not be a good idea, but really his reaction is very over the top if they've done nothing that violates a law on the books. So that's the Rambam's view. He says, between Ezra's reaction and the Pasuk of Eschanan, that's sufficient. Sorry?
What's this kuti?
Kutit is the term that would have been used to avoid censors. Kuti literally refers to the Samaritans or they're one of the Samaritan nations. But it's a term that was used frequently in the Middle Ages to avoid censorship of Jewish books. The Rambam likely did not write the word kuti. Kuti was probably inserted by a later copyist who didn't want his work to be destroyed. Yeah. So but that's the Rambam's view. The Torah disagrees. The Torah actually says that it's rabbinic. The Torah is an early code of Jewish law, predecessor of the Shulchan Aruch, and it says no, it's rabbinic. That's in source number 10. But then when you get to the Shulchan Aruch in source number 11, you find the statement by Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Mechaber, who says explicitly that this is a biblical violation, and the Ramah, Rabbi Moshe Isler, says Yesh Cholkin Bazeh. Yes, some do disagree. The bottom line is, though, that if you take the view that it's biblical, which is what we in practice believe, then Shimshon is violating biblical law by doing this. And even if you believe that it's rabbinic, and therefore Shimshon does not have a direct prohibition, it's still viewed negatively. there's no way around the negative implications of these verses, both in Parashas Ki Tisa, right, the one in source number 6, and in Ve'eshanan in source number 7, which associate it with idolatry. So how in the world do we make sense of a shofet? That's who Shimshon is. Doing this. It's a very difficult thing to understand. Yeah.
And after they get all those lashes, do they have to divorce or do they stay together?
Yeah, no, they have to divorce. This is a punishment to him for living with her. If he, in the event that he divorces her, then that'll happen and that'll be that. So there are three different approaches. Well, there's a fourth approach that I don't like. The fourth approach, which I'll mention only because you will encounter it, is some say that this is a sign of the degeneracy of the Jews of the time. Just like when Shimshon's mother is warned, don't eat anything tameh, there are some who say that it means non-kosher food, because otherwise she would have eaten non-kosher, and now the Malach specifically comes there to say, go kosher. So they'll also say that this is a sign of degeneracy, that the shoftim could, that Shimshon could be a shofet, and yet he could do this. But
how does his mother, who was seen to be such a stalwart figure and everything, how come she just disappears now and he's free to marry and do all these?
Well, actually, his parents are going to come back in this. Yeah, we're not done with his parents. They're coming back in the next parak. So hold the question until we see the conversation, this bizarre conversation, which Shimshon is going to have, not with his mother, but with his father, about the woman he wishes to marry. So, yeah, there is something to be said about this. So, the three answers that are offered. The first answer is what Alina suggested, which is maybe the women converted. And the classic Mefarshim, the classic commentators, take that view, that the women, in fact, converted to Judaism. If you take a look at source number 12, you see the Rambam. The Rambam killed my source sheet. I had so many other things that I wanted to bring here, and just there's no room. But I had to bring it because the Rambam has to be read at length. Like, there's no, you can't shortcut this Rambam. The Rambam writes, and this is in his work of law, Al yale al datcha. Do not think. Don't let it enter your mind. I like my translation. Do not entertain the thought. Shimshon Hamoshiach is Yisrael. O Shlomo Melech Yisrael Shnikra Yedid Hashem. Nasu Nashim Nochrios Begiusan. He says, don't even think it, that Shimshon, rescuer of Israel, Shlomo, who God calls Yedidya, he is called the friend of God, that they would have married foreign women. So now we're going to tackle both Shimshon and Shlomo at once. Ela sod hadavar kachu. He says, the secret of it is this. Shem mitzvah hanechona. The proper practice is, the proper mitzvah is, this is the protocol. Kishayavoa gero hagioras lihis gayer, when male or female convert comes to convert, it's funny that he calls them gero gioras already, but you understand what he's saying. Somebody wishes to become Jewish, maybe because he's saying somebody who's living in your midst as a ger, like ger toshav, that type of a thing. Maybe that's why. But when they come to convert, bodkin acharav shema biglal mamon sheyitol, o bishvil srara sheyizkela, o b'nei pachad bali kanes ladas. The first thing you have to do is investigate. Are they coming to convert because they want to get money? Is it because they want to get some kind of power? Is it because they're afraid of the Jews? That's why they want to enter Judaism. V'im Yishu, if he's a man, bodkin acharav shema einav nasan v'isha yehudit. So you investigate, maybe he has fallen for a Jewish girl. V'im Yishai, if it's a woman, bodkin shema einav nasna v'bachur mi'bachurei Yisrael. Then you investigate to see, maybe she has fallen in love with a Jewish guy. Im lo nimsa lehem ila, if you can't find any ulterior motive, Modian Osan Kovet Ol HaTorah, you tell them about how heavy the yoke of Torah is, V'torach Mishbasi Asa Al Ameha Aratzos, Kadesha Yifrocho, you tell them just how much work is involved in fulfilling the Torah, how hard it is for people, so that they will separate from it. In Kiblu V'lo Pirshu, if they accept what you have to say, and they do not separate, they don't go, they don't walk away, and you see that they have come to Torah out of love. Rambam keeps using, you'll see throughout here, the verb chazru, as though they were chazer b'tshuva, like they were originally Jewish and now they've left it. Unclear to me what this verb is about. But if he sees that they have come to you, they've come to Judaism out of love, mekabel nosan, then you accept them. And his basis for this is Rus Shnemar, as the Pasuk says, Vatera ki misametes hilalach hasita, vatechdal adaber eleha. She saw, Naomi saw, that Rus was continuing, she was persistent, and she said, okay, so I'm not going to try to turn her away. Lefichach, then the Rambam continues to say, therefore, because of our concern about ulterior motives, lo kiblu beis din gerim kol yimei David u'Shlomo. The Beis Din would not have accepted a convert in the times of David or Shlomo. Bimei David shem in a pachad chazru, in the days of David, because there were many wars going on, and maybe they would convert out of fear of our armies. Ubimei Shlomo, in the days of Shlomo, shema b'shvil ha-malchus v'atova v'agdula shayu b'Yisrael chazru, in the days of Shlomo, because there were no wars, but we're doing very well economically, maybe they would come to us to be on the right, on the winning team. Because if they come in, not because of the right reasons, but because of one of the emptinesses of this world, they are not considered to be of the righteous converts. That doesn't mean they're not valid as a convert. They are. Retroactively, their conversion is valid. And this is, of course, major point of discussion in Israel today, because of the distinction between somebody who converted and then was found to have an ulterior motive, or somebody who was never sincere about the conversion in the first place and only was going through the motions because of their ulterior motive. And the idea being that if they converted sincerely, in other words, they're planning to keep the mitzvahs and everything else, it just happens to be that the reason for doing so is because they want to marry somebody. That's valid as a conversion. Those who will disqualify conversions for bad motivation say there's a difference between that and somebody who has no interest in practicing mitzvos at all. They just know you have to stand here and say certain words so that you'll be able to be called a Jew, and then they have no intention of continuing with it further, whose conversion would then be disqualified. That's the distinction that is often drawn, and I'm not getting into the debate. He says, somebody who converts for ulterior motive is not mi gerei atzedek. And then he says, even still, how you gerim harbe miskarim bimei David u'Shlomo b'fnei hediotos. What happens when the Beis Din says no? So you get three people together, three men together, presumably, and you do a conversion with them. They would do an ad hoc Beis Din because the real Beis Din, so to speak, wasn't interested in helping them out. Nothing changes. Yes and no. They did do it. V'hayu Beis Din hagadol choshen lahem. So the great Beis Din was concerned for these conversions. Lo dochen osan achashatavlu. Right? They weren't going to reject them outright and say, well, you're not Jewish, because they had gone to mikvah, they made the statement. But they wouldn't draw them near and say, you're bona fide Jews, until they would see what was going to happen. The idea being that their subsequent behavior will demonstrate what they had in mind. And that's exactly where the challenge is today. And because Shlomo converted women and married them, and Shimshon converted them and married them. But it's known that these women only came to Judaism for a particular benefit, right? To marry Shlomo, to marry Shimshon. Veloapi Beis Din Girum. They didn't work with the proper Beis Din. They just did the three men, being the ad hoc Beis Din. Chishvan Akasov Ki Ilhein Akum Ubi Isuran Omdin. That's why the Psukim don't mention any conversion. The Psukim treat them as though they were still not Jewish. And further, because what happened with them in the end demonstrated what their conversion was all about from the beginning. Because they worshipped their stars and constellations, and bamos, and they built altars, and the Pasuk considered it as though Shlomo had built them. This isn't the story with Shimshon, but it is in the story with Shlomo, that the wives continued to worship idols, and the Torah considers it, the Navi considers it as though Shlomo built the altars. Shneamar az yivne Shlomo bama, as the Pasuk says, then Shlomo built an altar. So the Rambam's position is that they converted. Whether it was a great conversion or not, there was a conversion of some kind, which may, after the fact, turn out to be false.
Does that mean that we accept a conversion of any kind?
No.
Good.
No, it means you still require the basic steps of conversion. You can't get out of requiring brit milah for a male, mikvah for both, and acceptance of mitzvos. Those are your basic steps, no matter what. What constitutes a beis din? Do you require three experts? Is it enough to have three males? That's part of the discussion, the general debate about how conversion works. Who qualifies as a dayan?
Because Ruth doesn't have a dayan.
Not at that stage. Not when she's out of town there. But presumably, this is her expression of intent, and then when she gets to town, where you know they have a beis din, because Boaz does this whole, convening. So at that point, that's when the conversion would take place. So this is the Rambam. Ralbag says, of course, they converted. He says, in Ralbag, keep in mind, is sort of hard-headed. Like, if any of this classic Mefarshim was going to say they didn't convert, I would have expected it to be Ralbag. But Ralbag says no. He says, of course they converted. It would be prohibited otherwise. He's a Nizir Elokim. You can't think otherwise. And Radak is very forceful about it. I didn't bring it again because I ran out of room on the sheet. But Radak doesn't appear here. Radak appears back in Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Dalet. He's very forceful in saying that there absolutely must have been a conversion, and you can't think otherwise. Malbim sort of hedges. Malbim says Shimshon intended to convert them. Whether it actually happened is unclear. And he builds on the fact that when Shimshon wants to marry the first one, he asks his father to take this one for him as a wife, and he uses the terminology that's used in the Torah for kiddushin, for halachic marriage. So the intention is there for them to convert. Whether they actually do or not is another story. That's Malbim. Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin, a great Hasidic Rebbe who wrote a great deal in various areas of Torah, says, I'm sorry, it's not true. It's not true. They did not convert. They remained plishti. And he brings sources to support this. The Gemara in Sota, which Blineder I'll bring on next week's sheet, because you can't not see that Gemara, says that this was a mered. It was an act of rebellion against God, and that Shimshon desired a davar tameh. Shimshon wanted something impure. That's the language of the Gemara. That does not sound like they converted to Judaism. That's number one. Number two, if you jump ahead to Perek Yud Dalet Pasuk Gimel, and you notice what he says to his father. And to his mother, you see his father and mother at first, right? He says, Osa kach li, the end of the pasuk, Osa kach li, take that one for me, ki hi yashra be'enai, because she is righteous in my eyes. I think she's a good one. That's his statement. He says, I think she's Yashara. You could read Yashra Beinai just meaning that she's a good person or that she's right for me, but the implication, according to the Tzidkas HaTzadik, is I think she is Yashara even without a conversion. That's the way that he reads it. Well, then you have to ask a question, right? If you don't believe the women converted, then what is your justification? Or do you just say that this was just treif and that's it? So what we'll see next time is Tzidkas HaTzadik has one justification for it, and then the Abarbanel has another approach to it. But both of them are going to hinge on this very interesting turn of phrase that it's worth seeing. Let me see if I can find it for you quickly. Yes, Pasuk Dalet. The Aviv v'imo lo yad'u kemei Hashem hi. His father and mother did not know that this was from God. Ki to'ana hu mevakesh miplishtim. God was looking for a fight with the plishtim, and that's why this is going to happen. So we'll see next time what that means. What are you talking about? And what did Shimshon think was going on? So God willing, we continue with that next week. Thank you. One side note, during the shiur in reading the Rambam, I noted his use of the verb lachzor. The more I think about it, the more I think that this is like the usage we find occasionally in the Gemara, lachzor acharav, meaning to go looking for something, not necessarily to go back to something, to return, but simply when one expends effort to get something, that's lachzor acharav. I suspect that's what the Rambam's usage here is.